The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Welcome to the Bloomberg Law Podcast. I'm June Grosso. Every day we bring you insight and analysis into the most important legal news of the day. You can find more episodes of the Bloomberg Law Podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, and on Bloomberg.com/podcasts. In a long and wide-ranging interview with Fox News yesterday, President Trump spoke about his embattled personal attorney, Michael Cohen, saying Cohen only handled a small amount of his legal business.
He represents me, like with this crazy Stormy Daniels deal, he represented me, and, from what I see, he did absolutely nothing wrong. There were no campaign funds.
Joining us is former federal prosecutor Jeffrey Kramer, the managing director of the Berkeley Research Group. Jeff, the speculation about whether Cohen will cooperate seemed to reach a fever pitch after Trump's interview yesterday, where he tried to distance himself from Cohen, saying he only did a tiny, tiny little fraction of his legal work. If Cohen were your client, would you be knocking on the special counsel's door to make a deal?
You know, it all depends on how big a hammer the Southern District and maybe the special prosecutor has. If it's just the $130,000 campaign finance violation, and maybe there's a banking allegation there as well, I say just because in the scheme of things that's not much, he might not be looking at very much jail time. However, if they start getting into other transactions and possible other frauds, then the impetus to cooperate is going to be strong. But you have to keep in mind that if Mr. Cohen does cooperate, the chances of a pardon obviously goes out the door. And at the end of the day, he's going to be a disbarred lawyer looking for work, and he may want a favor from the president.
Now, within just a couple of hours after that phone call to Fox, attorneys were already drafting documents. They were getting ready to send things to court. Can you gauge just how damaging or not that phone call might have been for the president or for Michael Cohen?
Well, it certainly got rid of one checkbox that they have to do, which is that Cohen was representing the president in the Stormy Daniels transaction. Not that that's shocking. Obviously, Cohen wasn't doing it for himself, but that just gets that out of the gate to begin with. So now we're left with two things. One, either the president knew about the payment, in which case it could be a campaign violation, or two, that Cohen did it on his own with his own money without reimbursement from the president. I think it's doubtful it's number two, since I don't know many attorneys who are going to front $130,000 for their client and not get paid.
That seems like it would be something that would be rather easy to prove, or am I wrong?
You know what? With this set of prosecutors, it probably is. I mean, it's not going to be a check from the president's organization for $130,000, but it could easily be buried in an invoice from Mr. Cohen to the Trump Organization for legal services. That may be a little harder. You know, is it an extra $130,000 for research or for handling different cases? That's a little harder to dissect. But we're still left with what I think a reasonable statement is that, again, no lawyer fronts that kind of money without getting reimbursed. It makes no sense.
Before all of this happened, I had never heard of a special master before. I love the title of it. It sounds like a special rank, maybe in the Navy or something. But the judge who has been chosen to be that special master is Barbara Jones, and her reputation is that she cut her teeth as a mob prosecutor. Does that tell you anything, or is that just coincidence?
No, that's coincidence. Barbara Jones is a former prosecutor and federal judge. So when you're a prosecutor in New York City, the chances you're going to do some organized crime cases are pretty good. Barbara is a very well-respected practitioner, so I think both sides can be comfortable that she's going to call balls and strikes well.
Jeff, Stormy Daniels' lawyer asked to be allowed to join the case because of evidence that was seized from the raid on Cohen's office. Should he be allowed to join the case?
Well, it's not surprising he's trying to. It gets him at least a seat at the table to see what's going on. We're not sure if he has any standing or not, and the judge, Kimba Wood, who's certainly handled her fair share of high-profile matters, is being very careful, not surprisingly, and circumspect in this. So far it doesn't play out any way. I'm not sure if, again, he has standing at this point. It depends on what documents are in there, but at least he's putting a pin in the dartboard just to set his place there, just in case.
What is the process from here on out? There seem to be so many different layers and so many different strings going on to different cases and different civil suits. It all starts to get tangled up if you cannot keep track of it very clearly. So what is the process now? Walk us through.
Yeah, it is very convoluted. You know, there's a lot of clowns under this circus tent right now. So you have Trump's attorneys who wanted to, and the judge allowed them to take a look at what's there so they can take a first pass at what they think might be privileged. And the prosecutors, Southern District, has said they would have a taint team to go through the items. But what's going to happen is that Cohen's attorneys will look at it, Trump's attorneys will look at it. Prosecutors obviously know what they have for the most part. But then Judge Jones, Barbara Jones, will look at it and decide what is privileged and what is not, and then give it to the Southern District prosecutors. So in a normal case, not many normal things here, there would be what's called a taint team. Prosecutors and agents not associated with the case in chief reviewing items. The judge has kind of removed that from the prosecutors and going to have Barbara Jones look at it, and then decide what prosecutors can look at and what they cannot.
So, Jeff, during that interview yesterday on Fox, Trump hinted that he may intervene in the Justice Department's Russia investigation, which he has hinted at before. But did that send you any, you know, do you have any more additional concerns because of this Cohen probe that he might do that?
You know what? I think anyone who's been involved in the system and any former prosecutor, that would send a chill down their spine when the President of the United States says he's going to take over parts of the Justice Department. And if it came from any other president, I think it would be front page news. But because this president is somewhat free with his language and probably doesn't mean eight-tenths of what he says, you take it with a grain of salt. Like I said, if it had been any other president in our lifetime that made that statement, it would be shocking. That bar of shocking is pretty hard, right? It's pretty high right now. So is he going to take over the Justice Department? No. Is he just, you know, pontificating that 30-minute rant? Absolutely.
And you'll be aware that today he said again during his meeting with Angela Merkel, referring to that committee report, again, he said, no collusion, no collusion. Thank you, Jeff Cramer, as always. He's the managing director of the Berkeley Research Group and a former federal prosecutor.
Speaking at an infrastructure event in Richfield, Ohio last month, President Trump thanked President Obama for leaving so many judicial posts open for the Trump administration to fill.
We were left judges. They're the ones that judge on your disputes. They judge on what's fair on the environment and what's not fair, where they're going to take your farms and factories away and where they're not. Amazing. It was the gift.
Kind of. Despite congressional gridlock, President Trump and Mitch McConnell seeing some success confirming federal court nominees, filling the U.S. judiciary with young conservatives who can actually shape American law for generations to come. Laura Litvan covers Congress for Bloomberg News, and she joins us now to clear a few things up in our Bloomberg 99.1 studios in Washington. Let's talk about first what the president did say, that this was a gift, but it wasn't a gift, actually. It was something else.
Well, it was a strategy, really. I mean, we see in both parties in recent decades a growing determination as one presidency starts to end to, if one party, the other party will hold the Senate, to delay things and keep things open. So what we had happen under at the end of Obama's term was not only the Supreme Court vacancy after Justice Scalia passed away, that was kept open, but also a lot of people don't realize this, but there were 108 judgeships vacant when Trump came in. That's partly because the Republicans in the Senate used every available opportunity to try to delay some of the Obama picks. There were only two circuit court judges approved under President Obama's last 2 years, and 18 district court judges. That's a trickle.
Laura, let's talk about the judges themselves. Except in a few cases, the judicial nominations contrast with some of the other nominations that the Trump administration has put forward. Are the candidates being vetted or suggested by outside conservative groups?
Well, the Federalist Society, the executive vice president of that organization, is operating, as he says, separately as an advisor to the White House, because that group doesn't make recommendations, but certainly he's taking his perspective in there. And there's other people advising the White House. And, you know, the White House counsel, McGahn, is working closely with Mitch McConnell's office as they're ferreting through all the potential nominees, very closely looking for the right kind of a conservative, originalist kind of perspective that they want to bring to the courts.
Okay, so you had said that there were more than 100 vacancies. Is that right? How many judges are we talking about, and how much difference is this ultimately going to make?
Well, what we're seeing so far is, you know, a great impact on the appellate courts. 15 circuit court judges have been confirmed so far this year. That's a very high level. And we've had 17 trial court judges, of course, Gorsuch brought onto the courts. The appellate court number is very important because so many cases go no further than the appellate courts. We have about maybe 80 cases every year decided by the Supreme Court. Last year, 59,000 cases were decided by the 13 appellate courts.
Laura, the appellate courts are so important in decision-making because they're the last step before the Supreme Court, and so few cases get to the Supreme Court. But how close are they to actually turning those appellate courts to conservative? It takes a long time.
It certainly does, but that number 15 is much better than we've seen under the last five presidents. And there's more activity coming. Yesterday, the president nominated 8 more judges at the circuit and district court level as Congress was leaving town for recess. And Mitch McConnell, the majority leader in the Senate, took steps in the process to tee up votes when the Senate comes back on 6 more circuit court judges.
Okay, let's take a step back, take a wide, broad view of this. How this ranks in terms of accomplishments of the Trump administration, how the base feels about it, is this something that they would notice, they would recognize, and that they would support? I mean, is this right up there with tax cuts?
It has an even longer lasting impact, potentially, because so many of these judges are young, in their 40s and 50s. And the tax legislation, it could be reversed if Democrats retake the Senate. These judges will have lifetime appointments. And, you know, there's differing views about this. This is the activity has won over a lot of conservative critics of the president. The outside groups on the progressive side are deeply concerned. They say these judges could roll back civil rights protections, consumer protections, bring a much more pro-business perspective to courts. Gay rights could be at risk. So but this is a big deal. This could even be bigger than the tax bill.
So, Laura, look at the demographics of this. And Obama tried to get diversity on the federal bench. What's happening now?
There's a very sharp contrast between what Obama was doing in terms of the judges he was nominating and got through compared to what we're seeing under Trump. For instance, under Obama, we'll take the circuit court numbers. We had about 67% of the circuit court judges confirmed so far are white males. Under Obama, it was just 33%. Obama was trying to reverse what he saw under George W. Bush, which was a 63% for white male judges confirmed. And so it's kind of gone back and then some.
All right, Laura Litvin, Bloomberg News congressional reporter, a terrific story about this very issue on the Bloomberg Terminal. I encourage you to check it out. Thanks so much, Laura.
Thanks for listening to the Bloomberg Law Podcast. You can subscribe and listen to the show on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, and on Bloomberg.com/podcasts. I'm June Grosso. This is Bloomberg.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.